by transcription.
In a moment, you will hear an address by the President of the United States speaking from the Arnold Engineering Development Center at Tullahoma, Tennessee. Mrs. Henry A. Arnold, widow of General of the Army's Henry Hap Arnold, in whose honor the center is being named, Secretary of the Air Force Finletter, Air Force Chief of Staff Hoyt S. Vandenberg, and many other dignitaries are gathered for the dedication of this important research center for jet aircraft. The President will be introduced by the Honorable Gordon Browning, Governor of Tennessee.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States. Governor Browning, General Carroll, Mr. Evans, Senator Kefauver, distinguished members of the House of Representatives, honorable mayors, Mrs. Arnold, and ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Congressman Evans, you forgot to introduce my mayor when you were introducing the mayors. There's a mayor in Tennessee here who was a second lieutenant in my battery in France in the First World War. His name's Bill Kleeman. Kleeman from up here at Clarksville. I just want you to know he's here. I'm glad to be here in Tennessee to dedicate this great aviation development center. The great industrial progress of Tennessee and of the whole South makes it possible to build this key defense installation in this area. I'm sure that the presence of this center here will contribute further to the growth and prosperity of this region. Governor, I want to thank you most sincerely for the remarks which you had to make before I started. I think they were just exactly what they should have been, and as a Tennessee orator always does, it was done exactly right. It is most appropriate that this center for pioneering in science of flight should bear the name of General Henry H. Arnold. Hap Arnold was a great pioneer in the development of our Air Force. He was one of the first three officers in our armed forces to learn to fly a plane. He won his first flying trophy in a Wright biplane that had a 40-horsepower engine, turning two propellers by a chain and sprocket method, the same kind of power transmission as a bicycle has. General Arnold lived to command a mighty air force of 80,000 planes. Instead of 40,000 horsepower, some of the planes in that air force had 10,000 horsepower. And the power transmission system of some of those planes is more like a skyrocket than a bicycle. General Arnold had a lot to do with these improvements. He knew that you can't have a first-class Air Force with a second-class aircraft. He would have been delighted with this Air Research Center, which will do so much to make further improvements possible. I am happy to dedicate this center to his memory and to name it the Arnold Engineering and Development Center in the presence of his family and friends. The scientists who work here will explore what lies on the other side of the speed of sound. This is a part of our effort to make our air power the best in the world and to keep it the best in the world. This applies to the planes of the Air Force, the Navy, and the Marines. It applies to our guided missiles and all the future developments that science may bring. The purpose of our Air Force is to help keep the peace of the world. This is our fundamental objective. A large and powerful Air Force is one of the essential weapons we must have to prevent aggression, or to crush aggression if it happens. We need many other weapons as well: military, economic, and psychological weapons if we are to prevent a third world war. And we must keep finding new and better methods in each of these fields, just as we must keep developing faster and more powerful planes. We must use every possible means of securing and maintaining the peace. Our whole policy is based on world peace. That's been our policy all along. It is still our policy, and it hasn't changed one bit. Since World War II, we've done our best to build an international organization to keep the peace of the world. We've done that in the interest of the United States, because the only sure way to keep our own country safe and secure is to have world peace. The United Nations is the most far-reaching attempt that man has ever made to protect himself against the scourge of war. But the rulers of the Soviet Union had a different idea. They did not want to cooperate in keeping the peace. The people of Russia, the common everyday people of Russia, want peace just as much as anyone else. But their rulers in the Kremlin saw that the nations of the world had been weakened and demoralized by the agonies of war. They saw a chance to move in and impose their own system of slavery on other nations. We tried to settle post-war problems with the Soviet Union on a decent and honorable basis. But they broke one agreement after another. We offered to place the means of atomic warfare under effective international control. That was an offer to save mankind forever from the horror of an atomic war. But the Soviet Union refused to accept it, refused to accept the most unselfish offer for peace any nation in the history of the world ever made. We had a monopoly on that weapon, and we offered to surrender it to the world for peace. The Russians wouldn't accept that. Our actions showed that we were for peace. Even though our efforts were rejected by the Soviet rulers, our actions won for us the confidence and trust of other free nations. In spite of all the false and lying propaganda of the Kremlin, it was clear to all the world that we wanted peace. At the same time, we made it clear to all the world that we would not engage in appeasement. When the Soviet Union began its campaign of undermining and destroying other free nations, we did not sit idly by. We came to the aid of Greece and Turkey when they stood in danger of being taken over by communist aggression in 1947. As a result, these countries today are free, strong, and independent. We came to the aid of the peoples of France and Italy in their struggle against the political onslaught of communism. In each of these countries, communism has been defeated in two free elections since 1947. There is no longer any danger that they will vote themselves into the hands of the Soviet Union. We came to the aid of the brave people of Berlin when the Kremlin tried to take them over. We and our allies kept Berlin alive by the airlift, and it is still free today. We came to the aid of China when it was threatened by communist civil war. We put billions of dollars worth of arms and supplies into China to aid the Chinese nationalist government. We gave them more help than we gave Greece or Turkey or Berlin or Italy. The government of Greece took our aid and fought for freedom. But many of the nationalist generals, the generals of the nationalist China, took our aid and surrendered it and themselves to the communists. We can investigate the situation in China from now until doomsday, but the facts will always remain the same. China was taken over by the communists because of the failure of the nationalist government to mobilize the strength of China to maintain its freedom. After all, our aid can be effective only when people help themselves. We're continuing to give aid to the Chinese nationalists on Formosa, and that aid will be effective if they are now willing to do their part. On June 25th, 1950, 1 year ago today, the communist rulers resorted to an outright war. They sent communist armies on a mission of conquest against a small and peaceful country. That act struck at the very life of the United Nations. It struck at all our hopes for peace. There was only one thing to do in that situation, and we did it. If we had given in, if we'd let the Republic of Korea go under, no nation in the world would have felt safe. The whole idea of a world organization for peace would have melted away. The spirit of resistance would have been broken, and the free nations would have been open to conquest one by one. We did not let that happen. We remembered Japan and Manchuria, Italy and Ethiopia, and Hitler in the Tsar Basin. For the first time in history, a world organization of nations took collective military action to halt aggression. And acting together, we halted it. A year ago today, Korea looked like an easy conquest to the Soviet rulers in Moscow and their agents in the Far East. But they were wrong. Today, after more than a million communist casualties, after the destruction of one communist army after another, the forces of aggression have been thrown back on their heels. They're back behind the line where they started. Things have not turned out the way the communists expected. The United Nations has not been shattered. Instead, it's stronger today than it was a year ago. The free nations are not demoralized. Instead, they are stronger and more confident today than they were a year ago. The cause of world peace has not been defeated. On the contrary, the cause of world peace is stronger than it was a year ago. We've been fighting this conflict in Korea to prevent a third world war. So far, we have succeeded. We have blocked aggression, and we have kept the conflict from spreading. Men from the United States and from many other free countries have fought together in Korea. They have fought bravely, heroically, often against overwhelming odds. Many have given their lives. No men ever did more for their country, for peace and freedom in the world, than those men who have fought in Korea. The attack on Korea has stimulated the free nations to build up their defenses in dead earnest. Korea convinced the free nations that if they had to have armies and equipment, ready to defend themselves. The United States is leading the way with the defense expenditures of $40 billion. Other nations are devoting a large share of their national effort to our mutual defense. Never before in history have we taken such measures to keep the peace. Never have the odds against an aggressor been made so clear before the attack was launched. The Kaiser and Hitler, when they started their great wars of aggression, believed that the United States would not come in. They counted on being able to divide the three nations and pick them off one at a time. There could be no excuse for making that mistake today. We have the United Nations, which expresses the conscience and the collective will of the free world. We have the Organization of American States, which is building the strength of this hemisphere. We have the North Atlantic Treaty, which commits all the nations of the Atlantic community to fight together against aggression. We have unified land, sea, and air forces in Europe under the command of General Eisenhower. We are strengthening the free nations in the Far East and setting up collective security arrangements in the Pacific. We are building up our defenses and the defenses of other free nations rapidly and effectively. Most important of all, we have shown that we will fight to resist aggression. The free nations are fighting and winning in Korea. Never before has an aggressor been confronted with such a series of positive measures to keep the peace. Never before in history have there been such deterrence to the outbreak of a world war. Of course, we cannot promise that there will not be a world war. The Kremlin has it in its power to bring about such a war if it desires. It has a powerful military machine, and its rulers are absolute tyrants. We cannot be sure what the Soviet rulers will do, but we can put ourselves in a position to say to them, attack, and you will have the united resources of the free nations thrown against you. Attack, and you will be confronted by a war you cannot possibly win. If we could have said that to the Kaiser, or to Hitler, or to Tojo, the history of the world would have been very different. It hasn't been easy to bring the free nations together into this united effort to resist aggression. It hasn't been easy to work out these alliances and to build up our defenses and to hold the line against great odds and discouragement in Korea. It hasn't been easy, but it is a record of tremendous progress in man's age-old struggle for peace and security. We've made great progress, but we're not yet out of danger. The Kremlin is still trying to divide the free nations. The thing that the Kremlin fears most is the unity of the free world. The rulers of the Soviet Union have been trying to split up the nations of the North Atlantic Treaty. They've been trying to sow distrust between us and the other free countries.